everyone. This is Monica Liel welcoming you to the LL Research radio program, In the Now, Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert. Today is October 22nd, 2010. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Along with hosting In the Now, Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert, I am the head moderator of the Bring Forth Forums at www.bringforth.org. I will be asking Carla questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask Carla a question, please use the chat room on the webpage for In the Now at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. If you'd like to ask Carla a question live on the air, call 347-884-8770 and press the 1 key when prompted by Blog Talk's automated system. When you call, you'll be able to hear the show, but you'll be on mute until I patch you through to Carla. Again, that number is 347-884-8770. When we're done, I'll put you back on mute, at which time you can either continue to listen to the show by phone or you can hang up and listen to the show on your computer. When submitting questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Liel, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert of LL Research. You're listening to the worthy successor to last year's live chat on the Bring Forth website. This is our first show on primetime, and we will be here every Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern. Carla, how's your week been going?
Well, Monica, I got some interesting news this week. Let's put it that way. The Rock Group said that there are no mistakes, only surprises. So I got a surprise this week. I went to see the surgeon that had fixed my difficult neck and upper back. You know, I had an 8 vertebra spinal fusion last March. And I said, you know, something's gone on in my lower back, my middle back too, but the lower back seems a little more serious. I wonder if you'd mind taking a look. So with the aid of x-rays and stuff, he did. And he said, you know, stroking his chin. He said, well, your mid-back has got problems, but there's nothing I can fix. It's just arthritic. He said, but your lower back seems to have undergone some sort of translation, and I think if you want to continue walking, you'll probably have to have surgery. So here I was, just recovering from the spinal fusion in the upper back, and all of a sudden, you know, he springs this on me. So his fault. Yes, I know.
You just got done with one surgery, and now there's another one.
Exactly. So I took a look at my schedule, and we had one meeting scheduled for February, which obviously was not going to make it. So I got in touch with the one person that had signed up for that gathering. It was a channeling intensive introductory course, and I had had to cancel one before. After homecoming, I was just not ready to do it. I was unwell from doing too much at homecoming, which was over Labor Day weekend. So I wrote her. Fortunately, I know her. And so she's not a stranger to me. And I said, Jeanette, how would you like to do a channeling intensive all by yourself? Because you're the only one that's signed up for it so far in November sometime.
Oh, wow.
Wrote back and said, absolutely, I'm thrilled to do so. Give me some days. So I just sent her some days. And if they work, I'll get my admin, Gary, to hoist the flag and let everybody know what the days are. So in case anybody else wants to join her and me, I will be teaching even if it's just Jeanette. You know, the Broad Group said if one is illuminated, are not all illuminated. And I'm going with that.
All right.
The other thing I had scheduled after the first of the year was to do a 12-class course for the International Metaphysical University on my book, Living the Law of One, 101, The Choice.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wrote the International Metaphysical University people, and I said, I'm probably going to be laid up in January. How about doing this in December? I haven't heard back from them yet, but I did hear back from the dean, and she said it was just a matter of getting in touch with the woman that's going to come and help this dinosaur over the stile, getting all the software lined up and my face in the right camera and all that stuff so I can do the class. So hopefully I will be able to finish up all my honor duties, as Rob would call it, before the operation, and then it's just a matter of going through another recovery period, which is, of course, a prime time for inner spiritual work. And I have greatly enjoyed the recovery period for my other one. And fortunately, I'll probably be doing this, and it'll be early spring, mid-spring, late spring, and summer when I'm recovering. And out my window and out the back door, which I can see from my hospital bed in Jim's room, I can watch all the beauty unfold, and it just always lifts me up so much. So it's a perfect time to recover. So I'm looking forward to, shall we say, getting it behind me, since it is my behind that needs fixing. It seems to be completely out of gear.
Oh, dear.
I'll probably be able to clear Christmas before they assign me an operation date. So all is well, but there will be an interruption in this broadcast sometime after Christmas. And I'm springing this on Monica as well as on anybody that might be listening. Be prepared for that. But I will be on the air every Friday at 9 with Monica, right up until the date of the procedure, and we'll keep you informed. Now that everything's in train, you know, it'll just be what it is. Monica, I understand you had a hairy time today getting online.
Well, you know, we just got a new computer, and we had a problem with the graphics card. My son's going to replace it for me, but I didn't want to do anything drastic today because of the show. But as I was about to log on, the computer crashed. So I was like frantically trying to get my laptop going, and then I had to download Skype, and I just didn't get it all set up in time. So I am actually on the desktop computer. So just in case you lose me, I've got the laptop on standby. But if you lose me inexplicably, it's because my computer probably crashed, in which case I'll just call right back.
Okay.
I may have to call back on my cell phone, but I will call right back. So
okay.
You can just keep talking, and I'll get back on as soon as I can.
Well, I sure will.
but I can still operate.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. As a backup, I've got questions that Gary always gives Jim, questions that are sent in from all over, and I noticed the next question is yours. And in the event that something dreadful happens and I'm the only one on the line... I will just go and start working on the questions. There are like 6 pages of questions. I mean,
oh gosh, that ought to keep you busy.
3 dozen questions. So we'll be okay here regardless.
Okay, great. Well, speaking of questions, we do have some questions from the forum. All right, so I will start with that. And, but I do want to say I always marvel at how you manage to bring peace and beauty and just making the best out of what could be a traumatic situation, having surgery, and just to be able to see that as an opportunity for contemplation and serenity and growth and beauty, that's pretty cool. So I think that's cool that you're able to do that. Okay, the first question is from Deacon from the Bring Forth Forum, and that is bringforth4th.org. We have a discussion forum if anybody would like to check that out. The first question from Deacon: Hi, Carla and Monica. I would like to ask about the validity of the Emerald Tablets of Thoth. That's the question.
Uh-huh. Well, the Emerald Tablets is... The name of a theory that is actually one of the nicer conspiracy theories out there. I'm not a fan of conspiracy theories. I don't study them, and I have not checked out the Emerald Tablets for several years. I think that new stuff is added to the myth from time to time, but because of the fact that these things are necessarily service to self, it's just not my area, and I just don't go there much. But I remember taking a look at it when it was first pointed out to me and marveling at the intricacy and detail of it. I think that rather than say it's all junk, which would be easy to say, what I would say about this and about all conspiracy theories is that it's very difficult when you're looking at information that has some service to self aspects and some service to others aspects. In other words, when you're looking at material of mixed polarity, to weed out and find the positive information and disregard the negative information, it is as if in such channeling you are seeing or you are feeling someone that's loving you and caring for you and caressing you and then sticking a knife in while you're not looking and then caressing you some more and stroking you some more and then hurting you again. And then, you know, it's disconcerting. So if you have the energy, I would by all means read the material, see how it feels to you, see if there's anything you can get out of it. But do realize that in many, many sources of channeled material, the challenge is that there will be a mixture of positive and negative material. It's a wonderful story, as I recall, and I could be wrong about this, the Emerald Tablets are found inside rocks, you know, out west somewhere, and all of the things on the tablets, you know, are coming true. And of course, there's a big gloom and doom facet to the Emerald Tablets. So whether it's Hidden Hand or Emerald Tablets or any of those theories that have mixed information, I would say that the great challenge would be finding the positive information and gleaning that and taking that away. It's sort of like reading the Bible, Monica and Beacon. There is positive information in the Old Testament and the New Testament, according to Ra's estimate, about an equal amount of positive information in both books. And if you take a look at the Old Testament, you know that's a real slam against the Old Testament. but at any rate, yeah, it's in there. It's in there, but you have to weed it out. Thomas Jefferson did a really good job of weeding out the negative material from the positive material in the New Testament by making a Bible that consisted strictly of Jesus' direct quotes, you know, his parables. And he actually had them in five different languages. I think French was one of them, Greek, Hebrew, Latin, and in English. And you know, that sort of lessened distortion so that you could really study, you know, what Jesus was at least reported to have said, without the surrounding verbiage, which is sometimes killing and totally other than what Jesus would prefer, especially the things written by paraphrastic Paul in the Acts and in, you know, the books like Romans, Thessalonians, and so forth. But at any rate, nobody's done that for the Emerald Tablets, so you're going to have to do your own judging. So good luck, Beacon.
Okay, well, gosh, that's interesting. I didn't know that Thomas Jefferson had done that. What's that book called, that collection of the
parables?
It's called
the Jefferson Bible.
Interesting.
If you go to Amazon and write down the Jefferson Bible, it'll give you a paperback version of it to buy.
Okay. What a great idea. Okay. The next question is from Aaron. And Aaron says, "Dear Carla, what is the best way to get in touch with one's own spiritual guidance system? How does it usually present itself to a person? What are the most efficient ways to ask for guidance? What are the steps that have been effective for you to get in tune with your guidance? Also, if there is a Kuo session that has covered this topic before, I'd love to find that as well. Thank you for the incredible service that you and the Bring Forth team provide. It has been an absolutely invaluable team to me in this life."
Well, thank you so much, Erin. And while I am talking, I am going to see if I can find, there has been some channeling on finding your guidance system, and I'm going to do a Google search on guidance system. Well, if I spelled it right, that would be better. Okay, searching. Try April 4th, 2004 and March 4th, 2005 and April 2nd, 2006 and January 4th, 2004. All of those have guidance system in that's the first from the first page of the Google search on our library site. So give that a try, and let's talk now about the guidance system just from my human perspective. You asked how I first got in touch with my guidance, and actually I've been talking to my guidance system since I was a toddler, but don't think that that means that you're, you know, guilty of a delayed reaction or anything, because I was just an unusual small child. I was a small child, but I seemed to think more along the lines of a philosopher than a child, and it was a great problem for me in school, actually, because I wasn't compatible with people that played with dolls. I didn't understand. Now, if we wanted to talk about free will, I was your man, you know, but but not too many kindergartners want to do that. So at any rate, my first guidance system when I was a little tiny toddler was in my magic forest. I would take my glasses off. Yes, I wore glasses from the age of 14 months. I had really, really bad eyes. And I would put them on the Venetian blind. I was supposed to be taking a nap, but I never could nap during the day. And I just did this by accident the first time. I caught a sunbeam in the glasses. You know, it focused and it was very glaring, and I looked right at the sunbeam, and somehow I just slid right out on the sunbeam, and I was in a magic place, and it was wonderful. I could talk to the trees, I could talk to the animals, and I could talk to Jesus. Jesus was there. Now, it wasn't the Jesus that you see in the Sunday school pictures. It was a kind of a scruffy guy, dirty feet, as I recall, kind of a rough robe, a leather belt, sandals. He would never talk to me. His guidance was to look into my eyes. And when I looked into his eyes, I would know what love was. And that was my first guidance, was just looking into his eyes. But I went to church. I went to Sunday school, and I heard talk of the Holy Spirit. So I said, "Well, Holy Spirit, are you out there for me?" And I got a positive response. And so I would just communicate whatever I was feeling to the Holy Spirit. And I ended up calling her Holly, because I felt that calling somebody the Holy Spirit was a little bit stiff and formal. So I wanted a less formal name for my guidance system. So I called her Holly. And Holly and I have been having conversations ever since. And I rely on Holly and appreciate her advice very much. The guidance system for each person is unique. The raw material says that the source of the guidance is yourself, that in time space or metaphysical time, all times are simultaneous. It's a three-dimensional kind of a concept where all your incarnations occur somewhere within the circle of the soul stream. And in the center is that soul stream that all the experience comes to, which is your larger self, right? The self that's going through all of your incarnations simultaneously. Now, there is a point in mid-sixth density, according to the Confederation material, where the soul stops looking back and judging himself and deciding what he wants to ask for, what he wants to set his intention to do next. He realizes he's seen it, he's done it, he's got the t-shirt. He's ready to go home. So he gets ready to turn his back on the past and move in the completion of the cycle from Alpha to Omega, moving back into the unmanifest creator. And before the mid-sixth density self does this, he creates a thought form, and that thought form contains all of the highest and best information, inspiration, essence of you throughout all of your incarnations up through mid-sixth density. And that thought form of your higher self is available to you in any incarnation that you have. So that is the Confederation explanation of your guidance system. It's your higher self. Now, some people really like the idea of simply calling it a guidance system. Other people like the idea of investing that guidance system with some religious significance, like I do. But it's not necessary to do that. It's the same guidance system, whatever you call it. So as to how to get in touch with the guidance system, this is my recommendation. Either sit down at the computer ready to enter, or get a pen or pencil and a pad of paper, lots of paper, and get ready to have a conversation. Now, those of you who have read Conversations with God will be completely familiar with this technique. It's not arcane or abstruse. It's a simple technique. What you're attempting to do is work with that portion of yourself that has insight, that has intuitions, that can pick up hints and inklings and is sensitive to vibration. That is the part of your brain where you are able to process subconscious material in a conscious manner. It's the essence of channeling. And it's safe to channel your guidance system. It's not safe to do what I do in working to channel the Confederation entities. Those are outer sources, and it takes a great deal of preparation to do that safely. It doesn't take any preparation to contact your higher self, because your higher self is part of you. It's totally without a threat to you. So you are able to contact that without worrying about, oh dear, should I be tuning? Should I be challenging? No, you don't really have to do that. What you do is you start with the feeling of faith that you do have a guidance system. Now, long before I was familiar with Confederation philosophy, my mother once asked me how to pray. She said, there's nobody out there to pray to. I said, well, yes, there is. And she said, no, I just don't feel anything. And I said, well, Mom, I said, I want you to tell your troubles to your bedpost. She said, my bedpost? I said, yeah, just tell your troubles to the bedpost and then listen to what the bedpost has to say. So she could do that. I mean, she could tell the troubles to the bedpost because she saw the bedpost. It was there. And in the process of pouring out her heart to the bedpost, she rendered herself vulnerable to hear her guidance system. And the guidance system began talking to her, and she came back and she said, I'll be doggone. She said, that bedpost is really talking to me. I said, well, you do realize it's not the bedpost. She said, yeah, I kind of got that. So that's what you do. You sit down at the computer, or you write it out if you're more tactile, and you start talking. You pour out your heart. You express yourself. And you ask a question, and then you wait. And then the first thing that comes into your mind, you type it or you write it. You don't analyze it. You just write it down. And when you're done with that and you don't think there's anything more coming, then you can respond to that or ask another question. And then again, wait. The first thing that comes into your mind, type it out, write it down, and the conversation will have begun. Let's see, who was this? Beacon's question? No, this was Aaron's question. Aaron, if this doesn't work, write me again, and we'll work further. But usually, for most people, this will get her done.
Okay. That topic, I think, we could delve into that in a lot of depth perhaps later. We might want to revisit that. I thought of perhaps a few follow-up questions. But we do have a caller, so I think I'm going to save those follow-up questions for maybe later, if that's okay. And I'd like to take this caller, since it's our first live caller. And someone from area code 514, you are on the air. Hi there. Who are we speaking to?
Hi. Can you hear me?
We sure can.
All right. This is Peel Street guy.
Oh, my God. Hi.
Hi. Just thought I'd call and say hi to you in real voices.
Yeah, that's great to hear you, because, I mean, my God, you know, you're a good friend, so it's great that you called in.
Great. Well, Carla, it's great to hear your voice, Monica. You guys sound great, and I really love this show. It's really, it's a lot better than the chat thing, I think, that's for sure.
A little bit easier.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, here I was typing and typing and typing, and then everybody had to wait, and then, you know, this is better.
Definitely. It seems like you got the glitches out of the situation as well.
Well, not good.
We're working on it. We're working on that. We still have a few little glitches, but I'm glad nobody noticed. Or I hope nobody noticed.
That's great. Carla, I just wanted to say, I just heard about what you were talking about at the beginning of the show, and boy, that's really tough. I wish you all the best on that.
Oh, thank you so much.
You know, I think about you all the time. Your work and everything you've done has meant so much to me. I've been seeking for a long time. When I was 16, I started looking into metaphysical aspects of things. And I used to have a library of close to 100 metaphysical books and whatnot. And funny enough, I never came across the Law of One until about 3 years ago.
Oh.
And it really changed my life.
Oh, I am so glad that was available to you. Well,
that's
why we're here. That's why we stand at the old pop stand and put up our sign, 5 cents. No, we don't charge anything, actually. It's for free.
No, that's great. That's great. Yeah, you know, and I read a lot of the material for free at LL Research, and I decided I wanted my own books, you know, and bought them, and I read them all the time. It's fantastic. And,
we read them every day too. They never get old. They meet you where you are. And even today, I go, could you read that again? Because I don't think I've heard that way before. I need to hear that again. And you know, I've been listening to it since the early '80s. I mean, you know, you'd think in 30 years I'd have it memorized, but no.
I can fully understand that. Yeah, it's never. It's so funny. A lot of times, what I'll do is, if I'm going to work on the metro or something, I'll just bring one of them with me at my whim, you know, a book one or two or three or whatever, and then I'll just read that book for the week, you know, on the metro and whatnot. And when I come home, I'll keep reading it. But there's never a dull moment. I was thinking it would be quite interesting if you had Jim as a guest speaker one time on your show.
Wouldn't it, though? Yeah, the problem is getting him to do that. He's completely convinced that he has nothing to add, which I've been attempting to convince him otherwise since I met him. But getting that cowboy to give more than a yup, a nope, or a maybe is really a challenge.
Okay. Well, maybe if you knew there are other guys like him out there who, you know, go through the same work-a-day business and come home tired and, you know, it would be interesting anyhow.
Well, I'll tell him what you said, Peel Street guy.
All right. One quick question I might have for you would be, I was wondering, you know, in the Raw books, you know, you decided to go with the Tarot instead of the Kabbalah, right?
Right.
You had that choice at some point?
I had the choice of three things. We all three did. We have the choice of the tarot, the Tree of Life glyph, or traditional Western astrology.
Okay.
And astrology, I knew that I didn't want to get into astrology because I'd looked into it before, and it's a tremendously absorbing and very accurate method of predicting what road is before you, but it takes a lot of study. And the Tree of Life glyph, we thought about that, but the tarot we knew nothing about, and it had 22, count them, 22 images only. So we thought, okay, let's go with that. And that's why we chose the tarot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand that. It's interesting. You know, and I've read that, I believe mostly in book four, I think.
It's all in book four. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and it's funny. The first time I read it, I just basically skipped that whole section. And then the second time I basically did the same. And then there was a topic on Bring Forth Forum about it, and people were discussing the cards and whatnot. And that gave me the impetus to start reading it again. And I started to understand more of it and get into it a little more. But I guess I could say it's not quite my cup of tea, in a sense, you know? And I was wondering if there was any chance or possibility that in the future you could do something with Quo to discuss maybe the Kabbalah a bit, you know, like Kabbalah with Quo or something.
Well, it has an alliteration that's pleasing. We've actually had two gatherings that were strictly on the tarot, but we haven't had anything on the Tree of Life glyph, and the Kabbalah with Quo, you know, might be very interesting, but It does fall into the area of a very abstruse, advanced metaphysical study, for the simple reason that there's a lot of material leading up to studying the magical personality, as you know from reading the raw material,
right.
that you need to have not simply read, but have well under your belt and you know, your head has to be furnished with a lot of information before you can really take off and use the Tree of Life glyph of the Kabbalah or the tarot or even the astrological symbols. If you try to stay on the surface and try to define things literally, you'll fall into the same horrible situation that modern philosophy has fallen into, where you end up endlessly defining your terms. You need to have a lot of experience in following the path of resonance in your own life, and then when you look at the middle pillar, the right-hand pillar, the left-hand pillar, all the various connections between archangels and directions and qualities, you won't get caught so much in trying to be literal, trying to say, well, why is this a feminine trait? Why is this a masculine trait? And you can go more for the inner meaning. And it's a wonderful thing to work with a group. So I'm glad that the forums are taking those very difficult questions on. But, I'm open to it. And there was actually a lot of energy for having a gathering where we worked with the Tree of Life. But it was a victim of the last surgery. It was going to take place last February.
Oh dear.
And that was right before the operation, and I couldn't use my arms at that time, and so there was just no way. But you know, the future is before me, and once I get my bottom fixed so that I can still walk, and I've gotten my top fixed so that I can work, you know, once we get all of this repair done, then you know, when I'm back at it, hopefully we'll revisit this very interesting topic.
Well, great. Thank you. I love your adversity, you know. I mean, your courageousness versus your adversity. It's excellent, and it's an inspiration.
Well, thank you. You know, I think we all have tremendous suffering in our lives, but most of us have mental and emotional tension. And I don't think there's anything worse than what James Joyce called the Agenbite of Inwit, the agony, the angst, the pain that people go through emotionally. And I don't have that. I'm so fortunate. I have a wonderful husband that I'm behind 100%, and he's behind me the same. And my days flow in a sea of bliss. My relationships with all of the people here at L&L, all of my life, are just wonderful. And so I know I just slammed St. Paul earlier in the program, but one thing that I've always liked is his phrase. And mind you, you know, he was like being beaten half to death. And he says, well, it's just a light momentary affliction. And I've always liked that phrase. So this is just a light momentary affliction. And, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, it's a slam dunk. A doctor says to you, you're not going to be able to walk very much longer unless you get this operation. You're going to go, okay, doc, do the repair. You know,
yeah.
I do not want to end up in a wheelchair because I have to be. So,
not much choice.
No, so if you're solution oriented, which I tend to be, it's like, okay, let's get her done. Let's put it behind me. And meanwhile, you know, I know that I need the inner work, and I can always take the time for that inner work. And let me just take the opportunity to say that everybody wonders, what am I here for? What is my purpose in life? Why am I here? And we're all here for one purpose. We have a common purpose, and it's our main purpose. But nobody in this culture thinks about it, because we don't have a culture that is big on being. We have a culture that is big on behaving or doing or acquiring or things
avoiding.
Like that. Or avoiding, yeah. Well, going down to negative one there. But yeah. The thing of it is, nobody values their being. And yet that's the first job that we all have, is here we are. We're in a unique position to be able to translate or transmute metaphysical light into the physical manifestation of physical life. And we receive the infinite love and light of the Creator on a continuing basis. And instead of blocking it, instead of contracting with fear, and narrowing that energy, the wonderful thing to do is to keep our energy bodies open, let ourselves be, sit in our open hearts, take all of that wonderful love and light in, and let it flow right through us and out into the world, so that we're lighthouses. And, you know, we have our personalities. We all have little kinks and little quirks, you know, and it colors the light as it comes through us into pretty stained glass windows. So here we are, all lighthouses with stained panes that are the colors of our emotions and our personalities. And, you know, we can bless that light and just let it flow through. And you can do this service to humankind on your deathbed. You can do this if you can't move a muscle. As long as you're in your right mind, you can do this. And I think it's a very inspiring thing to realize that the power that we have as human beings, as individuals, is all right there for us to use. And it's there for us in every single moment of every single day. We can choose to offer that to the world. And it's just passive radiation of the light. But when all of your energy chakras, your energy centers are open, and the energy is flowing through and out the top of your head and out into the world, choosing to bless that light and send it on is number one for all of us. It's far more important, I think, than the outer work. It's more important that I stay tuned to joy and gratitude than that I was a channel, or that I am a channel, or that I'm a writer, or whatever. And it's true for all of us. It's the most important thing we ever do. And it just gets overlooked a lot, because it's being, it's essence. and it doesn't show. So after the operation, I'll just take the opportunity to count my blessings and be a lighthouse. So thank you for saying that it inspires you, but you inspire me too. We've had some good talks on the live chat. I remember them.
That's true, yes. Well, that's great. I love hearing and talking to you guys. I feel bad about taking up any more time because I'm sure there's some people whose questions they'd like to have answered. So I'd just like to wish you both all the best, and I'll be seeing you on the forum.
Okay.
Okay. Bye, Phil. Talk to you soon.
Cheerio.
Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Okay. That was wonderful. Okay, quick announcement. You are listening to Blog Talk Radio, and this is Carla Ruckert's show, In the Now, Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert. And if you'd like to ask Carla a question, we've probably got time for about one or two more questions. You can call in at 347-884-8770. That's 340-884-8770, and press the 1 key if you'd like to join the call live. And I now have a call from our chat room from Mo Rafa, or Rafa, I'm not quite sure or what how to say that. Mo says, I was wondering if you were familiar with what the double body is and if there's a difference between this and the higher self. And does solar gazing or mirror gazing into the eyes develop the ability to use this body?
Okay. Mo, I don't know the phrase double body. I can only assume that it's talking about the connection between the physical body and the energy body. And, of course, the energy body is the horse we rode in on before incarnation. Usually, we joined the fetus in progress in our mother's womb. Occasionally, someone will actually wait until the body is born and then join the body at that time. But that there is a point at which the energy body moves into sync with the physical body, and it hooks into it by something that the spiritualists call the silver cord. Russian scientists back in the 60s weighed the physical body at the time of death and found that there was a minute drop in body weight at the time of death. It was something like 3/10 of an ounce or 5/10 of an ounce, but it was posited by them that this is possibly the weight of the energy body as it leaves the physical body. It removes the silver cord and moves out. Of course, you are in the energy body while you're alive, too. So it's not a terrible shock when you die. I've experienced that. And it's as natural as breathing. And I did not experience any loss of consciousness whatsoever. I was just, all of a sudden, I was out of pain. This was during my kidneys failed when I was 13, and that they didn't have any techniques to fix them then. So I died for about 2 minutes and then came back. I chose to come back into this life and finish what I started. I was actually given a choice. So at any rate, that could be what is meant by the double body, but I don't know. Now, as to whether that would be the same thing as the higher self, no, that would not. The two bodies have to do with this particular incarnation. It's a hookup that is completely unique to this incarnation, this lifetime only. And you will never be the same person in any two lifetimes. It's not as though you are a unit and you move from your soul stream into the physical, carrying everything you've got with you. You don't. You just pack a bag. You're just gone for like a weekend, and you pack, you know, a few gifts. You pack a few challenges. You pack some relationships, and you're off. You know, you have a certain plan for this incarnation, and so your personality shell is not the same from lifetime to lifetime. although there is always that essence of you that's there, but it shows in different ways in different lifetimes.
Carla, sorry to interrupt. I want to interject real quick. I got a clarification. Okay, from the chat, Mo, because I asked if they wanted to clarify what they were referring to specifically, and Mo said, I've heard of the ability to remote view or astral travel while in deep meditation and actually be in physical locations at once, in two physical locations, I think is what they're referring to by the double body.
Right, okay. Okay, yeah, that's perfectly possible. It's not particularly safe. It's important if you're going to become interested in remote viewing and in moving out of your body and moving in your astral body that you go to a place like the Monroe Institute where they're very carefully teaching you techniques for protecting yourself while doing this, because it's a crowded universe out there and it's not good to leave your body untended. It's not good to venture forth, especially in a spiritually dynamic situation, such as attempting to get closer to the Creator, attempting to stand closer to the light. Those things are going to create attention from negative entities who then will attempt to distract you or disturb you. So it's sort of like channeling in that I would not advise you to do this on your own. I'd advise you to seek out a group that you trust, you know, do some reading beforehand, get a good feel for the group. And I recommend the Monroe Institute here because they've been doing this for quite some time. They've taught the Army. They've taught the Secret Services of the United States. And they know what they're doing, and they can teach you the techniques so that you can do your research and build your own intelligence. But I've talked to people who are very good at remote viewing, and there's no question in my mind but that it's a reality. I have even worked with the Silva Mind Control material just to see what I thought, how it felt, and I was able to pinpoint information about remote locations, and also I went several times into other people's bodies to try to pinpoint places where healing was needed, and the level of accuracy from a complete newcomer like myself was just amazing. I was like 2/3 of the time I was accurate, and that was just the beginning, you know, the beginning of that work, my very first brush with it. And it was enough to convince me, especially after the Ra group suggested that I not leave my body under any circumstances, that it wasn't for me. But if it is for you, then please investigate it carefully and with a group so that you have people with experience around you as you enter into this new area of research.
So, Carla, are you saying that if someone is doing the remote viewing or astral travel, they are leaving the body? And, I mean, can you elaborate a little bit on what the mechanism is that's happening there?
Well, sure. The silver cord is quite flexible and quite long, and there's not a problem in terms of being able to get out of your physical body. I think mostly the most common problem that I've heard is when people are re-entering, the energy body is re-entering the physical body, that there is a difficult re-entry. And so I would advise anybody that is having that experience, if you can remember, if you've ever been taught in sports how to fall, how to roll, tuck and roll, so that you don't hurt yourself, that's exactly how you get back into the physical body comfortably. You curl up into a fetal position and you roll in. You don't try to come in flat. That's the best clue I can give you as far as making yourself more comfortable. But by all means, seek to find a group to start out with this, because it is a way of investigation into the truth of things that yields great results, but it also demands a good deal of discipline, and you need to have someone teach you in order to maximize your safety.
Okay. A second part to that question was regarding solar gazing or mirror gazing. Do you have any?
Well, I taught in Mackinac Island, Michigan, at the Grand Hotel in 2007, and met a sun gazer, and she swears by gazing into the sun, staring right into the sun. She says it. She was not able to do it very long at first. She is now able to do it for minutes at a time, and she believes that she has healed a great number of physical ills that she was afflicted with, like allergies and so forth, by maximizing her use of the sunlight. Now, what I have done more of, I looked at the sun for a while, but I have weak eyes in the first place, and it did not appeal to me. So I did not pursue that. But I am convinced that for a person that's motivated and sets the intention to use that, that it is a good resource. Mirror gazing, like gazing into your eyes in the mirror, is a very powerful thing, and I have done that quite a bit more. The great thing about looking into the mirror is that one of the ways that you are able to know yourself better is to look into the mirror and see the Creator. That's straight out of the raw material. So what you do is you don't look at the mirror. You don't look at your face. You don't look at your image. You're looking into the black part of your eye, the window of your soul. So you're looking into the mirror. And it's amazing what 30 seconds of that will do for you. I once looked into the mirror for, oh gosh, it was a long time in subjective time. It was probably a 5-minute period where I was looking into the mirror and just continuing to look. And after a while, I started seeing shadows in the mirror, and I realized that I was seeing various of my incarnations. So it's really a wonderful resource. And I recommend it highly.
Okay. Well, we only have just a few minutes left. So rather than take another full question, I'd like to ask a quick follow-up question regarding that. And Mo does say thank you very much, by the way. Hmm. My follow-up question is, do you think lucid dreaming is anywhere in the same category as astral projection, or what is the difference?
Well, dreaming is an activity that we all do, whereas moving out of the body is not an activity that we're all familiar with, but we all do dream. And the basic definition of lucid dreaming is that you know you're dreaming and you become able to control your responses within the dream. And this is a very interesting way to explore some of the things that are material to you, but that you haven't processed in your waking life. For instance, I had the dream a couple of years ago, and it was leading up to all of this surgery and a larger interior life, that I was in a house. It was a beautiful house. It was furnished with exquisite antiques and crystal and vases that, you know, were obviously ancient and oriental. A lot of valuable carpets on the floor. All the beautiful things that I actually don't go after in this life. But I appreciate them completely. And I was thinking to myself, you know, why am I in this house? And so I decided, well, I'd like to get out of the house. And so I kept attempting to leave this beautiful house. And I couldn't. Every time that I went out into a patio, and then that led to another door, instead of the door leading to the street, it led back into the house. And I realized after I was involved in, you know, month after month of recovery and, you know, this discipline of the inner work, that that my dream was telling me that there was going to be a feeling, there could easily be a feeling of claustrophobia, that I couldn't get out of the situation, and that it was all okay, that it, you know, that I was protected. Because in the dream, eventually I did move out of the house, and all was well. So it was a dream with a good outcome. But the key to using dreaming beyond the point where you simply write down the dream and then you analyze the dream the best way that you can is to do the lucid dreaming. And what you do that that really makes the difference, and I've done this actually in dreams, is you move something in the dream. You move your hand, you know, whatever you look like in the dream. You know, you could be any race, you could be any age, you could be either sex, or should I say any sex these days. Heaven knows about all the different subsexes. We won't go into that. But at any rate,
no.
whatever the entity in the dream that you identify with is, you move something, if it's just an eyelash or a finger. Once you are able to move the tiniest little thing in the dream, then you have entered the dream. And, you know, you're sort of like a waking state inside the dream state. And you are far more able to be an actor in the dream that can bring back useful information than you were before.
Okay, thank you for that. And that pretty much wraps it up. We are out of time. Thank you so much for your words of wisdom, Carla. And as always, I always enjoy talking to you. I really love doing this. And to our listeners, you have been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert. I'm your host, Monica Leal. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our two websites, www.llresearch.org, which is LL Research's archive website, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, The Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more. www.bringforth.org, that's bring and then the number 4, TH, bringforth.org, is LL Research's community website featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. Thanks so much for listening in, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions and to those who called in. If you'd like to submit a question for Carla before the next show, please visit the Bring Forth forums at bringforth.org, navigate to the miscellaneous section, and post to the thread Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert, submitting questions. Or you can submit a private question to me at magicalmoons@gmail.com. That's magic with a K, M-A-G-I-C-K-A-L, moons@gmail.com. Have a wonderful week. We will be here next Friday, October 29th at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern, and we will talk to you then.